I would have been dead.
You are replaceable. I ask again, do you agree?
Zirik could not bring himself to respond.
I choose to interpret your silence as agreement, Z-Man.
Zirik glared at the speaker while Orin continued.
At best, you will get paid only half for the job. The amount of lost cargo will be set against that and added to your marker. It was already in excess of 2 million credits, if I remember correctly. The note on the ship and some loans against your gambling.
Orin always remembered correctly. The job would net negative for Zirid. He wanted to punch something, someone, but there was no one in the cockpit but him.
This makes me look bad, Z-Man. And I very much dislike looking bad. You will make this up to me.
Zirid did not like the sound of that.
How?
A pause. Then...
By doing a spice run.
Zirid shook his head.
I don't run spice. That was our understanding.
Orin's voice never lost its calm, but the edge on it could have gouged armor.
The understanding has changed, contingent as it was, on your successful completion of assignments. You owe us a large sum of credits, and you owe me a large sum of face. You will make up both with a few spice runs. That's where the credits are. So that's where you will be.
Zirid said nothing. Could say nothing.
Are we clear, Z-Man?
Zirid scowled, but said,
Clear.
Return to Volta. I will be in touch soon. I have something in mind already.
I'll bet you do.
Zirid thought, but didn't say. The channel closed, and Zirid let fly with a sleet storm of expletives. When he'd finally vented, he cleared Ord Mantell's gravity well and its moons, set a course for Volta, and engaged the hyperdrive.
I'm a spice runner now,
he said, as the black of space turned to the blue of hyperspace. The treadmill under his feet had just picked up speed. Erin felt dizzy. A rush of emotion flooded her. She could not name it, categorize it. It was just a wash of inchoate, raw feeling. She was swimming in it, sinking.
Something is happening, Sayo, she said, her voice tight. I don't know what it is, but it's not good.
Master Zalo and the 6 Jedi Knights near Malgus leapt back and up, flipping at the top of the arc of their leaps, and landed in a crouch 20 meters away.
May the Force be with you all!
Zalo shouted to his fellow Jedi, and lit his blade. Dozens more Jedi poured out of the hallway behind him and flowed down the staircase, the blades of their lightsabers visible through the smoke and dust, a forest of green and blue aura flames. The Jedi did not shout as they charged, but the rumble of their boots and sandals on the floor sounded like rolling thunder.
Stay near me,
Malgus said over his shoulder to Alina.
Yes,
she said, her blasters already in hand. Malgus's Sith charged out of the carcass of the dropship, their collective roar the sound of a hungry, rage-filled beast. The red lines of their blades cut the dust-covered air. Lord Adras, a political favorite of Darth Angrel and constant irritant to Malgus, led them. Like all of the Sith warriors save Malgus, a dark mask obscured his face entirely. Malgus used his distaste for Adras to further feed his anger. He had requested that Darth Angrel allow him to lead the attack alone, but Angrel had insisted that Adras lead the dropship team. Discarding his cloak, discarding the remaining restraints on his rage, Malgus joined the Sith charge, taking position before Adras. Emotion fed his power, and its swell fairly lifted him from his feet. He felt the power of the dark side around him, within him. Blaster bolts crisscrossed the battlefield from left and right as 2 platoons of Republic soldiers emerged from somewhere above and to the side and fired into the Sith ranks. Malgus nested deeply in the Force, perceived the dozens of bolts and the trajectory with perfect clarity. Without breaking stride, he whipped his blade left, right, angled it 10 degrees, and turned 3 bolts back on the soldiers who fired them, killing all 3. A soldier had exploded a grenade in his face in the Battle of Alderaan, so he enjoyed killing soldiers when he could. Behind him, Alina's twin blasters answered to the left and right with bolts of their own, picking off two more soldiers. The Sith and Jedi forces closed, Sith battle lust facing the calm of the Jedi. The floor of the temple, the arena where centuries of indeterminate strife would at last reach a conclusion. Those strong in the Force would survive, and their understanding of the Force would evolve. Those weak in the Force would die. Malgus sought Master Zallo, but could not make him out from the crowd of faces, dust, flames, and glowing blades. So he chose a Jedi at random from the crowd, a human male with a blue blade and a short beard, and targeted him. Waves of power distorted the air, and Dopplered sound as the Jedi and Sith forces crashed into one another and intermixed in a chaotic roaring tangle of bodies, lightsabers, and shouts. Malgus augmented his strength with the Force, took a two-handed grip on his blade, and unleashed an overhand slash designed to split the Jedi in half. The Jedi sidestepped the blow and cross-cut with his blue blade at Malgus's throat. Malgus got his blade up in time, parried, and slammed a kick into the Jedi's midsection. The blow folded the Jedi in half, sent him reeling backward 5 paces. Malgus leapt into the air, flipped, landed behind him, and drove his blade through the Jedi. Roaring with battle lust, Malgus sought another opponent. A flash of lavender skin drew his gaze. Alina. She ducked under a saber slash and dived to her side, firing 6 blaster shots as she did so. The Padawan who tried to kill her, a female Zabrak, the horns of her head gilt with colored pigments, deflected the shots as she closed in for another blow. Alina flipped to her feet, still firing, but the Padawan deflected every shot and drew nearer. Malgus drew on the Force, and with a blast of power drove the Padawan across the hall and into one of the towering columns of stone, where she collapsed, blood leaking from her nose. Alina continued firing, her eyes darting here and there over the battlefield as she sought targets. The battle turned ever more chaotic. Jedi and Sith leapt, bounded, rolled, and flipped as red lines intersected with those of blue and green. Blasts of power sent bodies flying through the air, against walls, pulled loose rocks from the ceiling, and sent them crashing into flesh. The hall was a cacophony of sound, shouts, screams, the hum of lightsabers, the intermittent sound of weapons fire. Malgus walked in its midst, reveled in it. He watched Lord Adras leap into the middle of the squad of Republic soldiers and punctuate his landing with an explosion of Force energy that cast the soldiers away like dry leaves. Malgus, not to be outdone, picked a Jedi Knight at random, a human female 10 meters away, held forth his left hand, and discharged veins of blue lightning from his fingertips. The jagged lines of energy cut a swath through the battle, harvesting 2 Padawans as they went, until they caught up to the Jedi Knight and lifted her off her feet. She screamed as the lightning ripped into her, her flesh made temporarily translucent from the dark power coursing through her. Malgus savored her pain as she died. He caught Adras eyeing him and gave him a mocking salute with his lightsaber. The high-pitched sound of Alina's blasters drew his attention. She bounded past him and over the slain female Jedi Knight's corpse, a lavender blur firing rapidly. Putting her back to a column, she crouched and sought targets for her blasters. She met his eyes, winked, and signaled behind him. He whirled to see a score of more Republic soldiers rushing into the hall from a side room, blaster rifles tracing hot lines through the battlefield. Alina answered with shots of her own. Before Malgus could dispatch the soldiers, the Mandalorian rose from somewhere behind them, her jetpack spitting fire, her head-to-toe silver and orange armor gleaming in the fire of the hall. Hovering in the air like an avenging spirit, she discharged 2 small missiles from wrist mounts. They struck the floor near the Republic soldiers and blossomed into flame. Bodies, shouts, and loose rock flew in all directions. Still hovering, she spun a circle in the air, while flamethrowers mounted on her forearm engulfed another group of soldiers. Malgus knew the battle had turned, that it soon would be over. He glanced around, still seeking Zallo, the only opponent in the field worthy of his attention. Before he could locate the Jedi Master, 3 more Jedi swarmed him. He parried the chop of a human male, leapt over the low slash of an orange-skinned Tabruta female, severed the hand of the third, a female human, disarming her, then grabbed her by the throat with his free hand and slammed her into the floor with his force-enhanced strength.
Alara!
Said the human male. Leaping high over the male's cross-slash, Malgus landed behind the Togruta, who parried his lightsaber strike, but could not defend herself against a force blast that sent her skidding across the hall and into a pile of rubble. Malgus roared, the lust for battle so pronounced that he would have killed his own warriors were there no Jedi left to slay. He wanted, needed to kill another, and to do so with his hands. He ducked under a slash from the male, lunged forward, and took the Jedi by the throat. He lifted him from his feet and held him suspended in the air, gagging. The Jedi's brown eyes showed no fear, but did show pain. Malgus roared, squeezed hard, then dropped the body and stood over it, blade at his side, breath coming hard. The battle still swirled around him, and he stood in its center, the eye of the Sith storm. Malgus finally spotted Master Zalo, 10 paces away, whirling, spinning, his green blade a blur of precision and speed. One Sith warrior fell to him, another. Lord Adras landed before him, trying to take Malgus's kill for himself. Adras ducked low and slashed at Zalo's knees. Zalo leapt over the blow and unleashed a blast of energy that sent Adras skidding on his backside across the hall.
He is mine!
Malgus shouted, charging through the battlefield. He repeated himself as he passed Adras.
Zalo is mine!
Zalo must have heard Malgus, for he turned, met his eyes. Alina, too, must have heard Malgus's shouting. She emerged from behind the column, deduced Malgus's intent, and fired several shots at Zalo. Zalo, his eyes on Malgus throughout, deflected the bolts with his blade and sent them back at Alina. Two struck her, and as she collapsed, Zalo used a force blast to drive her body against the column. Malgus halted in mid-stride, his rage temporarily abated. He turned and stared at Alina's fallen form for a long moment. Her lavender body crumpled on the floor, her eyes closed, two black circles marring the smooth purple field of her flesh. She looked like a wilted flower. Anger refilled him, overcame him. A shout of hate, raw and jagged, burst from his throat. Power went with it, shattering a nearby column and sending a rain of stone shards through the room. He returned his gaze to Zalo and stalked toward him, his rage and power surging before him in a palpable wave. Another Jedi stepped in front of him, blue blade held high. Malgus barely saw him. He simply extended a hand, pushed through the Jedi's insufficient defenses, seized his throat with the force, and choked him to death. Tossing the body aside, he moved toward Zalo. Zalo, for his part, moved toward Malgus. A Sith warrior bounded at Zalo from his left, but Zalo leapt over the Sith's blade, spun, slashed, and cut down the Sith. Zalo and Malgus closed. They halted at 1 meter, studied each other for a moment. A human male Jedi Knight separated from the swirl of battle and stabbed at Malgus. Malgus sidestepped the blue line of the blade, punched the man in the stomach, doubling him over, and raised his own blade for a killing blow. Zalo bounded forward and intercepted the downstroke. Zalo and Malgus stared into each other's faces, and the rest of the battle fell away. There was only Malgus and his rage, and Zalo and his calm. Their blades sizzling in opposition. Each used the force to press against the strength of the other. But neither had an obvious advantage. Malgus shouted rage into Zalo's face. Only a furrowed brow and the tight line of his mouth betrayed the tension behind Zalo's otherwise tranquil expression. Feeding off the anger from Alina, Malgus shoved Zalo away and unleashed an onslaught of overhand slashes and crosscuts. Zalo backed off, parrying, unable to respond with blows of his own. Malgus tried to split Zalo's head, but Zalo blocked again and again. Malgus spun into a high, force-augmented kick that hit Zalo in the chest and sent him flying backward 10 meters. Zalo flipped and landed upright in a crouch near two of Malgus's Sith warriors. They lunged for him, and Zalo parried one blow, leapt over the second, and spun a rapid circle, cutting down both Sith. Malgus, burning with hate, flung his lightsaber at Zallo. He guided its trajectory with the Force, and it spun a sizzling path through the air at Zallo's neck. But Zallo, riding the momentum of his attack on the second Sith, leapt into the air and over the blade. While Zallo was still in the air, Malgus unleashed a blast of energy that caught the Jedi unprepared and sent him crashing downward into a pile of rubble. He lay there, prone. Malgus did not hesitate. He mounted the column of his anger, shouting with hate, and leapt 20 meters into the air toward Zallo. Mid-jump, he used the Force to recall his blade to his hand, took a reverse two-handed grip, and prepared to pin Zallo to the temple floor. But Zallo rolled out of the way at the last moment, and Malgus's blade sank to the hilt in the stone of the temple's floor. Zallo leapt up and over Malgus, landing in a crouch, reactivated his lightsaber, and pelted across the floor back at Malgus. Eschewing speed and grace for power, Zallo loosed a flurry of rapid strikes, slashes, and lunges. Malgus parried one blow after another, but could not find an opening to mount his own counterattack. Lunging forward, Zallo slashed crosswise. Malgus parried, and Zallo slammed the hilt of his saber into the side of Malgus's jaw. A tooth dislodged, and his respirator was knocked askew. Malgus tasted blood, but he was too deep in the Force for the blow to do real damage. He staggered backward a step, as if the blow had stunned him. Seeing an opening, Zallo stepped forward and cross-cut for Malgus's throat. As Malgus knew he would do, Malgus turned his blade vertical to parry the blow and spun out at the blade lock. Reversing his lightsaber during the spin, he rode it into a stab that pierced Zallo's abdomen and came out the other side. Zallo's expression fell. He hung there, impaled by the red line. He held Malgus's eyes, and Malgus saw the flames of the burning temple reflected in Zallo's green irises. "It's all going to burn," Malgus said. Zallo's brow furrowed, perhaps with pain, perhaps with despair. Either way, Malgus enjoyed it. He waited for the light to disappear from Zallo's eyes before jerking his blade free and allowing the body to fall to the floor. The shock hit Aaron with little warning. The sensation as sudden and powerful as a blaster shot. Her body spasmed. The tranquility bracelet in her hand, the bracelet given her by Master Zallo, snapped in her clenched fist, and the tear-shaped bits of coral rained to the floor. She doubled over, moaned. Her stomach sank. Her vision blurred. The room spun. Her legs dissolved under her, and she felt herself slipping, falling, sinking. A fist formed in her throat, throttling the cry that wanted release and allowing it loose only as an aborted, grief-ridden wail. Through their connection in the Force, she felt the sharp stab of agony that Master Zallo experienced, felt her own breath hitch in sympathy as he took his final breath and died. The line of his life, usually so bright in her mind's eye when she felt the Force, usually so close to her own line, vanished from her perception. Beside her, Sayo's sharp, surprised intake of breath told her that he had felt something too. Despite her pain, the rising despair, the reality settled on her immediately. She had seen it in the eyes of the Sith male.
"What was that?"
Sayo asked, his voice seemingly far away, but his question fat with ugly possibilities. She lifted her head, her long hair dangling before her face, and stared across the room. Both Sith were standing, their bodies tensed, knowledge in their eyes.
"We are betrayed,"
she answered, her voice a hiss. She left it unsaid that her master, the man who had been a father to her, was dead. She was surprised to find her legs sturdy under her as she stood up straight. A group of people near her... No, not people. They were statues. Alderaanian statues. She was on Alderaan for peace negotiations with the Sith. And the Sith had betrayed them. She had fought the Sith on Alderaan before, during the battle for the planet. She would do so again. Now!
"How do you know this, Aaron?"
But Sayo's voice, his doubt did not erode her certainty.
I know,
she spat. The Sith knew too. They had known all along. She could see it in their faces. Her view distilled down until it consisted entirely of the two Sith and nothing else. A roar filled her ears, the crashing surf of grief and burgeoning rage. She heard a voice calling her name from some distant place, repeating it as if it were an invocation. But she paid it no heed. Both Sith eyed her, their stances ready for combat. The man wore the same contemptuous sneer, the curve of his thin lips uglier than the scars that lined his face.
Eren?
It was Sayo calling her name.
Eren! Eren!
They knew. The Sith knew.
They knew all along,
she said, speaking as much to herself as Sayo.
What? Knew what? What has happened?
She did not bother to answer. She fell into the Force, drawing on its power. Time seemed to slow. She felt as if she existed outside herself, watching. Her body moved across the antechamber, her boots scattering the coral of her bracelet. Violence filled her mind as she moved among the statues of men and women of peace.
Eren,
Sayo called.
Do not!
She did not reach for her lightsaber. Her need would not allow for such antiseptic justice. She would avenge Master Zalo's death with her bare hands.
No clean death for you,
she said through the wall of her gritted teeth. Some distant part of her recognized her emotional slippage, recognized in passing that Master Zalo would not have approved. She did not care. The pain was too deep, too fierce. It wanted expression in violence, and the two Sith in the room became the focus of its need. The male Sith reached for his lightsaber. Before he could activate it, Eren unleashed a blast of power that lifted both Sith from their feet and blew them into the wall. Two Alderaanian statues caught in the effect of her power slammed into the wall to either side of the Sith and shattered into chunks. The Sith must have used the Force to cushion their impact, for neither appeared hurt. Both leapt to their feet and spaced themselves apart for combat. Hilts came to hands, and their lightsabers made red lines in the air. The male held his blade high over his head in an unusual style, awaiting her charge, light on the balls of his feet. The female held hers low, in a variant on the medium style. Behind her, Eren heard the hum of Sayo activating his blade. She did not slow her advance. Using the Force, she jerked the male's hilt from his hand and brought it flying into her own grasp. Then she tossed it aside, and his sneer melted in the heat of his surprise. She advanced on him, heedless of the woman, imagining the feel of her hands on his throat. He answered her approach with a blast of power, but she made a V with her hands, formed a wedge with her will, and deflected the blast to either side of her. More statues toppled, shattered. The female Sith, caught in the deflected blast, was thrown backward 10 paces. She closed to 5 paces, 4. The male Sith took a fighting stance. They would fight not with lightsabers, but with their hands. Close, bloody work. Eren used the Force to augment her strength, her speed. She felt it flowing within and around her, turning her body into a weapon.
Eren Lanier!
A commanding voice said, Master Darnalla's voice.
Jedi Knight Eren Lanier!
Sayo too called to her.
Eren, stop!
The combination of Darnalla's and Sayo's voices penetrated the haze of her emotional state. She faltered, slowed, stopped. Reason elbowed its way past her emotional turmoil, and she gave voice to her thoughts. Without taking her eyes from the male Sith, she said,
The Sith have betrayed us, Master Darnalla. The negotiations were a ploy.
Darnalla did not speak for a moment. Then,
You felt this?
Tears fought to fall from Eren's eyes, but she forced them back. She nodded, unable to speak. Master Darnalla's next words hit Eren like a punch in the stomach.
Listen to me, Eren. I know. I know. But hear me now. Coruscant is in Imperial hands.
Eren's breath went out of her. The statement did not make sense. Coruscant? The heart of the Republic? Had fallen to the Empire?
What?
Sayo asked.
How? I thought...
That cannot be,
Eren said. She must have misheard. She turned from the male Sith, who had recaptured his sneer, to face the leader of the Jedi delegation. Master Darnalla stood in the archway, her skin a deeper red than usual. Senator Amriss and a senior Jedi Knight, Satil Shan, flanked her. The senator, a Saurian whose ruff of white hair topped the cliff of his furrowed brow, towered over the other two. His worried eyes looked out from a wrinkled face, but focused on nothing. He looked lost. Satil, on the other hand, looked as tightly wound as an ion coil. Her gaze fixed straight ahead, her auburn hair mussed, the veneer of her neutral expression unable to mask the emotion boiling beneath it. Neither Amriss nor Satil seemed to notice the destruction in the hall. Both looked dazed, blank-eyed refugees wandering through the ruins of events. Only Darnalla seemed composed, her hands clasped before her, her eyes noting the details in the room, the broken sculptures, the position of Aaron relative to the two Sith. Aaron wondered what had transpired in the negotiation room. For a fleeting moment, hope rose in her. Hope that her fellow Jedi had perceived the Sith betrayal and arrested or killed the Sith negotiators. But that hope faded as the lead Sith negotiator, Lord Barriss, emerged from the chamber and stood near Darnalla. His wrinkled face could not hold the smugness he felt. It leaked out around the raised corners of his mouth. His dark hair, combed back off a widow's peak, matched his dark robes and eyes. In a haughty baritone, he said,
"It can be, Jedi Knight. And it is. Coruscant has fallen."
Satil visibly tensed, her left hand clenched into a fist. Amriss sagged. Darnalla closed her eyes for a moment, as if struggling to maintain her calm.
"As of now," Lord Barriss continued, "Coruscant belongs to the Empire."
"How?"
Aaron began, but Darnalla raised a hand.
"Say nothing more! Say nothing more!"
Aaron swallowed the question she wished to ask.
"Deactivate your lightsaber!"
Darnalla said to Sayo, and he did. The female Sith did the same.
"What happened here?"
Lord Barriss asked, his eyes on the Sith brother and sister, the ruin in the room. The male Sith bowed, used the Force to pull his lightsaber hilt to his hand, and hooked it to his belt.
"A slight disagreement, Lord Barriss. Nothing more. Please forgive the tumult."
Barriss stared at the male Sith for a time, then at the female.
"It is well that the disagreement did not lead to bloodshed. We are, after all, here to discuss peace."
He seemed almost about to burst out laughing. Amriss whirled on him. Satil grabbed the senator's cloak as she might a leash, to keep him from getting too close to Barriss.
"Peace! This entire proceeding was a farce!"
"Senator!"
Darnalla said, and took Amriss by the arm. But Amriss would have none of it. His voice gained volume as he gave vent to his anger.
"You did not come here to discuss peace! You came here to mask a sneak attack against Coruscant! You are dishonorable liars, worthy of..."
"Senator!"
Darnalla said, and her tone must have reached Amriss, for he fell silent, his breath coming fast and hard. Lord Barriss appeared untroubled by Amriss's outburst.
"You're mistaken, Senator. The Empire is here to discuss peace. We simply wish to ensure that the Republic would be more amenable to our terms. Should I understand your outburst to mean that the Republic is no longer interested in negotiating?"
While Amriss reddened and sputtered, Darnalla broke in.
"Negotiations will continue, Lord Barriss."
"You are ever the voice of wisdom, Darnalla," Barriss said. "The Empire will expect a return to the negotiation table at this time tomorrow. If not, matters will go poorly for the people of Coruscant."
Darnalla's skin darkened further, but her voice remained placid.
"Our delegation will discuss matters and contact you tomorrow."
"I shall look forward to that. Rest well."
Amriss cursed Barriss in Saurian, and Barriss pretended not to hear. As the Republic entourage picked its way among the rubble in the hall, among the rubble in their hearts, Aaron felt the mocking eyes of the Sith male upon her, and could barely contain a shout of rage. Before leaving the room, she knelt and picked up one of the coral beads from her shattered bracelet. Chapter 3 Malgus surveyed the ruin. The shell of the dropship still smoked and burned in places. Bits of blackened metal dotted the hall. Walls and columns had been reduced to piles of jagged rubble. Cracks veined the walls and ceiling. Light from the day's dying sun traced dust-filled lines from roof to floor. Bodies, many of them Sith, but more of them Jedi and Republic military, lay strewn about the floor amid the rubble. A few groans sounded here and there. The Mandalorian stood in the temple's shattered entrance. She held her helmet under her arm, and the sun glinted on her long hair. Her eyes moved across the destruction, the hard line of her mouth showing no emotion. She must have felt Malgus's eyes on her. She met his gaze and nodded. He returned the gesture, one warrior acknowledging another. She pulled her helmet back on, turned, ignited her jetpack, and lifted off into Coruscant's sky. The Empire would see to her payment. Of the 50 Sith warriors who had assaulted the temple, perhaps a score remained on their feet. Malgus was displeased but not surprised to see Lord Adras among the living. They, too, shared a look across the ruin. But no mutual gesture acknowledged their kinship as warriors. Neither credited the other with anything. With the battle over, the remaining Sith warriors assembled near the dropship and raised their fists in a salute to Malgus, shouting a victory cry amid their fallen foes. For a moment, Adras stood among them and did nothing, merely stared at Malgus. Then he, too, reluctantly joined the salute. Malgus let his tardiness pass. For now. Malgus acknowledged the salute with a nod.
You are servants of the Empire, and of the Force.
They shouted once more in response. Malgus kicked the hilt of Zalo's weapon out of his way, deactivated his own lightsaber, stepped over Zalo's body, and strode among the rubble, among the fires, among the dead, until he reached Alina. He felt the eyes of his warriors on him, the eyes of Adras, felt the change in sentiment come over them. He did not care. He knelt and cradled Alina in his arms. She remained warm, breathing. The puckered blast wound Zalo had given her looked like black mouths in the skin of her shoulder and chest. She appeared to have no broken bones.
Alina, open your eyes, Alina.
Her eyes fluttered open. Ferritin, she whispered.
Hearing her pronounce his name before other Sith surprised him, and his hand closed into a fist so tight it made his knuckles ache. She must never behave familiarly with him in front of other Sith. She must have sensed his anger, for she blanched, cowered, staring at his closed fist, her eyes wide. That she understood her transgression diffused his anger. He unrolled his fist and extended his hand.
Can you stand?
Yes, thank you, Master.
He lifted her roughly to her feet, heedless of her wounds. She winced with pain and leaned on him. He allowed it. Her breath came in pained gasps.
Summon a medical team from Steadfast,
he ordered Adras. Adras's eyes narrowed. No doubt he thought the task beneath him.
You heard Darth Malgus, Adras said to a nearby Sith warrior. Summon a medical team.
No, you do it, Adras.
Adras stared at him for a moment, anger in his eyes, before he pulled a curtain over his irritation and turned his face expressionless.
As you wish, Darth Malgus.
From outside, explosions like thunder sounded, the steady drumbeat of intense bombardment. Angrel's fleet had begun its attack on Coruscant.
I signaled Darth Angrel that the temple was secure, Adras said,
the faintest hint of defiance in his tone.
You seemed preoccupied with other things at the time.
Adras's gaze fell on Alina, then returned to Malgus. Malgus glared at Adras, one fist clenched, and fought down the flash of anger. He would not allow Adras's borderline insubordination to diminish the rush he felt at his victory.
I will forgive your arrogation of power this once, but do not overstep again. Now remove yourself from my sight.
Adras colored with rage, his mouth a thin line of anger, but he dared not say another word. He gave a half bow and stalked off. Mulgus made his grip on Delina gentler as they turned to look outside. The ruined entrance of the temple, widened by the dropship crashing through it, opened onto clear sky. Together, he and Delina watched Imperial bombers streak out of the orange and red clouds and light Coruscant aflame.
Go see it, Master,
Delina whispered to him.
It is your victory. I am fine. Go.
She was not fine, and he knew it. But he also knew that he had to see. He left her, and walked the hall until he reached the shattered entranceway. The statues of the Jedi that had lined the processional lay toppled, broken at his feet. He looked out at the culmination of his life. Imperial ships swarmed the air. Bombs fell like rain and exploded into showers of red and orange and black. Gouts of smoke poured into the sky. The few native speeders that remained in the air were pursued by Imperial fighters and shot down. Hundreds of fires filled Mulgus's field of vision. A skyrise burned, a pillar of flame reaching for the heavens. Secondary explosions sent deep vibrations moaning through the ground. Mulgus occasionally caught the sounds of distant, panicked screaming. A handful of Republic fighters got airborne, but they were quickly swarmed by Imperial fighters and blown from the sky. He opened a communications channel to Darkness, Angrel's command cruiser.
Darth Angrel, you have heard that the Jedi Temple is secure?
The sound of a busy bridge served as background noise to Angrel's response.
I have. You've done well, Darth Mulgus. How many warriors died in the assault?
Adras did not tell you.
Angrel did not answer, merely waited for Mulgus to answer the original question.
Perhaps 30,
Mulgus said at last.
Excellent. I will send a transport to pick up you and your men.
I would rather you wait.
Oh?
Yes. I wish to see Coruscant burn.
I understand, old friend. I will ensure the bombers spare the temple, for now.
The channel closed, and Mulgus sat down cross-legged in the doorway of the temple. Soon, several of the Sith warriors took station around him. Together, they bore witness to fire. In less than half a standard hour, an Imperial medical transport cut through the smoke and flame and other Imperial ships that filled the sky to set down in a cloud of dust on the large processional outside the Jedi Temple. The two pilots, visible through the transperisteel of the cockpit, saluted Mulgus. A belly door slid open, and two men in the gray and blue of the Imperial Medical Corps hustled down the ramp. Both carried cases of supplies and instruments, and both had the soft physiques of men who, despite their warrior training, had not seen hard work in some time. Bipedal medical droids, their polished silver bodies reflecting the fires burning in the cityscape, walked behind them, each pulling a treatment cart with a tri-level gurney behind it. Mulgus rose and approached them. The doctor's eyes widened at his appearance. His scarred mien alarmed most, and they gave crisp salutes.
There are several wounded within. The Twi'lek female is my servant. Care for her as you would me.
An alien, my lord? Asked the older of the two men, his jowls dotted with a day's growth of gray beard.
As I'm sure you know, Imperial medical facilities in theater are restricted.
Mulgus took a step toward him, and the doctor's mouth snapped shut.
Care for her as you would me. Do you understand?
Yes, my lord,
the doctor said, and the medical team hurried past. More explosions rocked the urban landscape. A bomb struck a power station, and an enormous flare of plasma jetted half a kilometer into the sky. A flight of ISF interceptors notable for their bent wings, streaked over the temple. The Sith around him cheered. Alina emerged from the temple, her mouth tight with pain. The doctor trailed after her, worry creasing his brow.
"Please, mistress,"
the doctor said, eyeing Malgus with terror.
"Please."
Alina's eyes widened as she took in the scale of the bombardment, the destruction. Malgus stepped before her.
"Go with the doctors. There's an Imperial medical ship, Steadfast, in orbit with the rest of the cruiser fleet. Await me there. I will come when I am finished here."
"I do not require care, Master."
"Do as I command,"
he said, though his voice was not harsh. She swallowed, smiled, and nodded.
"Thank you, my lord,"
the doctor said to Malgus.
"Come, mistress."
He took Alina gently by the arm and escorted her aboard the transport, while bombs fell and the Republic died. After the medical team had triaged and loaded the wounded, the Sith loaded their own dead aboard. The bodies would be taken to Dromund Kaas or Korriban for proper rites. Malgus wished Adras had been among them. After the transport lifted off, Adras, masked once more, came to Malgus' side.
"What of the Jedi bodies?"
Adras asked. Malgus considered. The Jedi had fought well, especially Sallo. They misunderstood the Force, but he nevertheless wished to treat them honorably.
"Make the temple their tomb. Bring the whole thing down."
"I will request a bomber to..."
Malgus shook his head and turned on Adras. They stood about the same height, and Adras did not quail before Malgus's appearance.
"There are more than enough explosives still on the dropship. Use them."
"This is an order, my lord."
Malgus held his calm with difficulty.
"Sith should destroy the Jedi Temple, not Imperial pilots. Do you disagree, Adras?"
Adras seemed not to have considered this. Malgus was not surprised. Adras, too, misunderstood the Force, and he had little sense of honor. Still, he did as he was told.
"It will be done, my lord."
Presently, the charges were set, and Malgus held a remote detonator in his hand. He eyed the temple one last time. Its towers, the stacked tiers of the central structure, the toppled statues, the great entryway made into a rough and jagged sneer by the passage of the dropship. The rest of his Sith forces stood gathered around him.
"Should we remove to a safe distance?"
Adras asked. Malgus regarded him with contempt.
"This is a safe distance."
"We are 20 meters away from the entrance," Adras said.
Staring into Adras's face, Malgus activated the detonator. A series of low booms sounded, starting deep within the temple and drawing closer as the charges exploded in sequence and undermined the temple's foundation. A strong gust of dust and loose debris blew up at the entrance. The explosions on the upper levels began, grew louder, fiercer. Stone cracked. Large chunks fell from the temple's facade and crashed to the ground. Flames were visible through the entrance. A whole series of explosions followed in rapid succession. The sound of the snapping spine of the Jedi Order. The huge edifice, a symbol of the Jedi for centuries, began to fall in on itself. The towers collapsed in its wake, the huge spires crumbling as if in slowed motion. A jet of fire and bits of rock moving faster than the speed of sound exploded out of the now collapsing entrance. Instead of taking cover, Malgus fell into the Force, raised both of his hands, palms outward, and formed a transparent wall of power before himself and his warriors. His fellow Sith joined him, mirroring his gesture, mirroring his power. Rocks and debris pelted into the shared barrier, the speeding shrapnel of ruin. The jet of flame struck it and parted around it, water to a stone. The temple continued its slow demise, falling inward, shrinking into a shapeless mound of rubble and ruin. And then it was over. A thick cloud of dust hung like a funeral shroud over the mountain of shattered stone and steel that had been the Jedi Temple. There could have been Jedi survivors in the temple's lower levels. Malgus did not care. They were either crushed or trapped forever.
And so falls the Republic,
Malgus said. The Sith around him cheered. No one among the Republic delegation to Alderaan spoke until they had cleared the hall. No one seemed to know what to say. Aaron struggled to keep their collective emotional turmoil at bay. Like her, they were bouncing randomly among grief, rage, and disappointment. Even Darnalla was struggling to stay centered, though she appeared outwardly calm. Darnalla finally broke the silence, her tone at least, all business.
We need to reach Master Zim as soon as possible. I need his counsel.
How can we be sure he is alive?
Satil asked.
If Coruscant is fallen.
As one, the delegation faltered. Sayo and Aaron shared a look of shock. It had not occurred to Aaron that Master Zim, too, might have been lost.
I would have felt it if he were dead,
Darnalla said, nodding as if to assure herself.
Arrange a secure communications link, Satil.
Yes, Master Darnalla.
No one needs to leave here,
Darnalla said to all of them. Aaron saw that the Master's eyes were bloodshot.
When word of the attack reaches the public, the press will want comment. We are to give none until we have settled on our course. I will speak for this delegation for now. Agreed?
All nodded, even Senator Amriss.
This will ultimately be a decision for the Republic to make, Senator,
Darnalla said.
The Jedi will advise, of course.
Amriss slouched when he spoke, weighed down by events.
I will discuss matters with the acting head of the Senate,
he said.
The Senate may not exist as of today,
Darnalla said.
You may have to act in its stead. Your advisors here can assist you. We will support you, and whatever decision is ultimately made.
Worry lines creased Amriss's forehead. He swallowed, nodded. They walked through the empty corridors, despondent. The High Council building had been vacated for the negotiations. Even the Alderaanian guards, typically stationed within the structure, had been relegated to posts outside. Though the windows looked out on courtyards of manicured grass and shrubs, gently flowing fountains, and elegant sculptures, Aaron nevertheless felt as if they were walking through a tomb. Something had died within the building. Her thoughts churned. All of them seemed to be on the edge of saying something, yet no one said anything. Aaron finally gave voice to what she imagined all of them must be thinking.
We cannot let this aggression stand, Master.
Satil and Sayo gave small nods of agreement. Darnalla stared straight out a window at the Alderaanian countryside.
I fear we will have no choice. The Chancellor is dead.
Dead?
Aaron asked.
We saw it happen,
Satil said, nodding, her voice tight.
He said an Imperial fleet attacked Coruscant. It seems the attack focused on the Senate and the Jedi Temple.
I doubt they stopped there,
Amriss said.
There were Padawans in the temple,
Sayo said.
Satil continued. We have no idea of the numbers of the Imperial forces, or what other damage they may have wrought.
We cannot surrender Coruscant,
Aaron said. The statement appalled everyone into silence.
I agree,
Darnalla said at last.
It should not come to that.
Should not?
Sayo asked.
Aaron could scarcely believe what she was hearing. The Jedi had been duped, had failed in their charge to protect the Republic. Master Zim should have foreseen the Sith plan.
She stared out the windows as they walked, barely seeing the Alderaanian landscape, the nearby river. She had fought Imperial forces on Alderaan, had beaten them into retreat. She wanted nothing more than to fight them again, now. Darnalla's voice brought her back to the present.
How did you know the Sith had attacked Coruscant before we exited the negotiation room, Aaron?
I didn't, Aaron admitted. Not with certainty.
I only knew that...
She tried and failed to keep the emotion from her voice.
Master Zalo had been killed. And when I saw the look in the eyes of the Sith...
Sayo moved a step closer to her, as if he would protect her from her grief.
Master Zalo is dead, then,
Darnalla said, stiffening. Her words sounded tight, the grief leaking through her control.
You are certain?
Eren nodded, but said nothing more. Simply built a wall of her will to hold back tears. Sayo seemed to want to offer her comfort, but instead he did nothing.
We all mourn him, Eren,
Darnalla said.
And the others lost today.
Eren could not keep the anger from her voice.
Yet you would have us return to negotiate with those who did this.
Darnalla stopped in her tracks, turned to face Eren. Eren knew she had overstepped. Darnalla's voice remained level, but the heat in her eyes could have set Eren afire.
There are billions of people on Coruscant. Children. Their lives depend on us acting judiciously, not rashly. Your emotions are controlling your tongue. Do not let them control your thinking.
She is right, Eren,
Senator Amriss said, and put a hand on Eren's shoulder.
We must think of the good of the Republic.
Eren knew both of them were right, but it did not matter. She would get justice for Master Zalo, one way or another.
Forgive me, Master,
she said.
Senator.
I understand,
Darnalla said. And the group started walking again.
I understand all too well.
Zerid tried and failed to sleep in his chair for a few hours while Fat Man pelted through the blue tunnel of hyperspace. Instead, he worried over his next job. More, he worried about the job after that, and the one after that. He worried about his daughter. About how she'd get the care she needed when he saw it as inevitable now, died on one of his jobs. The hole he lived in seemed to be getting deeper all the time, and he got no closer to digging his way out. The instrumentation beeped a signal to indicate the end of the jump. He detinted the cockpit canopy as the ship came out of hyperspace, and blue gave way to black. A ball of Volta's star burned in the distance. Volta was visible through the canopy, its dayside shining like a green and blue jewel against the dark of space. Arriving in Volta's system made him feel immediately lighter. The part of him that kept work at bay reasserted itself. The thought of seeing Era always did that for him. He engaged the engines and Fat Man sped through the empty space between him and his daughter. When he neared the planet, he turned the ship over to the autopilot and waited for planetary control to ping him. While waiting, he called up a news channel on the holonet. His small in-cockpit vidscreen showed images of the peace negotiations on Alderaan. He'd forgotten about them. Since mustering out, the war between the Empire and the Republic had become little more than background noise to him. He knew Havoc Squadron had accounted well for itself on Alderaan, but not much more. Footage of the Sith delegation entering the Council building filled the screen. Commentary, then footage of the Jedi delegation doing the same. He thought he saw a familiar face among the Jedi.
Freeze picture and magnify right.
The vidscreen did as he ordered, and there she was. Eren Lanier. She still wore her long sandy hair loose. Still had the same green eyes. The same hunched posture. As if she were bracing herself against a storm. Which she was, Zerid supposed, given the keenness with which she felt the emotions of those around her. He hadn't seen her in years. They'd become friends during the months they'd served together on Balmora. He'd come to know that she could fly pretty well, and fight very well. He respected that. And because he fought pretty well and flew still better, he thought she had respected him. She never drank with Zerid and the commandos, but she always hit the cantina with them, just watching them. Zerid had assumed she came along because she liked the emotional temperature of the commandos when they drank. Relief and joy at having survived another mission. She always had an openness to her face, an expression in her eyes that said she understood. Her openness had drawn drunk soldiers like sweet flies to nectar honey. They'd wanted to look in her eyes and confess something. Zerid imagined it must have been exhausting for her. And yet she'd always been there for them. Every time.
The vid cut to a shot of Coruscant, and a commentator said,
"Until today, when an attack."
The ship's comm unit chimed receipt of a signal, and Zerid killed the vid. Expecting planetary control, he reached for it, but stopped halfway when he realized it was the encrypted subspace channel he used with the exchange. He considered ignoring the hail. Speaking to Orin so near to Volta would soil his reunion with Era. He did not want business on his mind when he saw his daughter. The steady red blink of the hail continued. He relented, cursed, and hit the button to open the channel. Hit it so hard that he cracked the plastoid. He tensed for what he would hear.
"What?"
he barked. For a moment, Orin said nothing. Then,
"If voice analysis didn't show it to be you speaking, I might have assumed I'd hailed someone else."
"I have something else on my mind right now."
"Oh?"
Orin paused, as if awaiting a more thorough explanation. Zerid offered none, so Orin continued.
"As I alluded to before, I have something urgent. Delivery requires someone with extraordinary piloting skills. Someone like you, Z-Man."
"I just finished a job, Orin. I need time."
"This job will wipe your slate clean."
Zerid sat up in his chair, not sure he'd heard correctly.
"Say again?"
"You heard me."
Zerid had heard him. He just couldn't believe it. Mere hours ago, he imagined he could never get clear of the exchange. Now, Orin was offering him just that. He tried to keep his voice steady.
"This just a drop?"
"It is a drop."
"What's the cargo?"
He tried not to choke on the next word.
"Spice?"
"Yes."
"Where is it going?"
He figured it had to be heading to some seriously hot hole of a planet for Orin to have offered to clear his debt.
"Coruscant."
Orin pronounced the name reluctantly, as if he expected Zerid to balk.
"That's it?"
"Did you hear what I said?"
"I did. You said Coruscant. So what's the catch?"
"The catch?"
"Coruscant ain't exactly a hot LZ. It's a vacation compared with what I'm used to. So what's the catch?"
"You haven't caught the hollow."
"I've been in hyperspace."
"Of course. The Empire attacked Coruscant."
Zerid leaned in close. Once more, not sure he had heard correctly. Orin's simple statement and the flat tone in which he delivered it did not seem to have the wherewithal to carry the import of the word Zerid thought he'd heard.
"Repeat? There were peace negotiations taking place on Alderaan. I just saw them on the Hollow. What do you mean by attacked?"
"I mean attacked. An Imperial fleet is in orbit around the planet. Imperial forces occupy Coruscant. No one knows much else because the Empire is jamming communications out of Coruscant."
Zerid's thoughts still could not quite wrap around the idea. How could the Empire have attacked any of the core worlds, much less the capital?
"How could they have gotten past the defense grid? It doesn't make sense."
"I neither know nor care about the particulars, Z-Man. Though I gather it was a surprise attack that occurred right in the midst of the peace negotiations. If nothing else, one can appreciate the Empire's boldness. You fought against the Empire, didn't you, Z-Man?"
Zerid nodded. He had traded shots with Imperial forces many times, originally as a commando in the Republic Army, then as whatever he was now. For a moment, he flashed on the ridiculous notion that he should re-up with the Army. He chided himself for stupidity.
"You can get the rest from the Hollow. Meanwhile, start planning for this drop."
"The drop. Right. You want me to fly a ship full of spice into a freshly conquered world occupied by the Empire? You said they locked down comm traffic. They'll have orbital traffic to a minimum, too. I can't sneak through that. Even flying dark, they'll blow me out of space."
"You'll find a way."
"I'm open to suggestions."
"I have faith you'll figure something out."
"At the least, we should wait until matters settle. The Empire will probably allow regular commercial ship traffic to resume in a week or so. At that point..."
"That will not work."
"It's gotta work."
"No. The cargo needs to move immediately.
Zerid was starting to like things less and less. His sense of smell picked up something turning to rot.
Why?